Blog Talk Radio.
Denise Griffiths is your partner in success. Tune in each Friday as virtual assistants, industry expert, web developer, and online entrepreneur Denise Griffiths interviews industry experts from one end of the internet to the other. These expert entrepreneurs freely share their business building knowledge and provide practical guidance that will show you how to build and grow your own very successful business, be it online or traditional brick and mortar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your partner in success, Denise Griffiths.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. Today, I'm pretty excited. I get to welcome to the show Carla Lundblad. Carla is a Beverly Hills clinical therapist and sports psychology counselor who works with elite athletes. And if you know anything about what I do, I work with a lot of people in that particular arena. So this call is going to be very, very interesting for me. Did you know that between 60 and 80% of professional NFL, NBA, and MLB players will be by the end of their career are going to be either bankrupt, broke, divorced, or unemployed? None of these are good. So Carla knows that for many of these players, expert structured psychological counseling will help avoid the extremely negative changes of fortune that have clouded just so many sports careers. Turn on your TV, you know what happened to these guys. Carla developed what she calls the Lundblad 10 system, which I do not have enough coffee on board. I will tell you right now. The Lundblad 10 system was specifically designed to help professional athletes develop awareness of the common pitfalls that are encountered with a high-income, high-profile lifestyle. And by helping them structure a decision-making process that, if implemented early enough, will be by the end of the career, it will allow them to be part of the 20 to 40% of professional players who are employed, financially stable, and successfully married. Carla, this works for the rest of us too, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I hope. Good.
I think the percentages are higher in that there are some definite reasons for that, but as with all things, you can
stress
information for yourself.
Good. Well, please join us in the chat room or on the phone during the interview, and if you'd like to ask either one of us questions, feel free. So good morning, Carla, and thank you. I'm so glad to have you on the show.
Well, good morning, Denise. I'm glad your morning didn't go without the kids, like mine normally does anyway. And, you know,
it's been interesting.
Well, I think that creates a great opportunities in life sometimes. So I suppose you'll probably want to know a little bit about me. I specialize in sports psychology, performance enhancements, and celebrity psychologies. And I have had over a decade of training to become a clinical therapist. And the work of my specialty has happened over the last 6 years, and that actually had found me. So through volunteer work that my husband and I do, and it's probably important to note that my husband's a former professional baseball player, athletes over time and families and coaches and even professional athletes have come up to me and asked me some very serious questions. And so that got me to begin some research and see what was available for specifically baseball players at that time, and then it's my research and my experience has since expanded. So what I actually came to realize was that the levels of performance and mental blocks were symptomatic of larger underlying issues pertaining to life outside the field. But what was really interesting that I found that even seemingly successful athletes who they themselves might say that they were not having performance issues on the field or on the court, could also experience a significant improvement in performance through utilizing the same principles and the methodologies that we already have in sports psychology. So I found that to be extremely interesting. And what I also realized was the news was actually very great, wonderful, in fact, because a lot of these underlying issues are quantifiable, measurable, which means that we're able to see them and they do exist. And in that, they're also very changeable, and many could be improved upon if not their effects removed completely. So that was actually some surprising news for me, and I was very excited to understand that, and thus my career and specifically in my specialty began.
Oh, goodness. I'm going to ask you later on to kind of give me a for instance, because I need to know. I need to know what you inquiry minds want to know. But, you know, one thing that I do know about the Lone Blade 10 system is that it's pretty intensive. When I say intensive, I don't mean that there's a lot of work that goes into it. I'm sure there is, but it's a very comprehensive system. You seem to have covered everything from A to Z and beyond. Do you mind sharing a little bit the key points with it, with our audience?
You know, as I had been doing some research, and a lot of great sports psychologists and therapists have done research over time, a lot of it's been featured in publications like Sports mm-hmm. Illustrated. What I realized was there was an absolutely huge divide between the science that we've already discovered and that we know that works and implementation by the players. And so I felt probably my best work was to take the information that we have and distill it down into a very simple format, because I kind of believe things should work that way, and put together some real practical tips. The Lone Blade 10 system is actually a 10-week intensive boot camp. I also do a psychological personality assessment, and usually when I say that, everybody's scared. But the thing that's interesting about that is I think it's important to know personality traits and your own personality traits and how to utilize those in the best way. I think if we're left to our natural devices, we don't use our personality traits in a positive way. Maybe we do in a negative way. So it actually mm-hmm. becomes very positive information and very scientific. But in addition to that, there are career counseling that is involved in this program. Mm-hmm. So relationship 101 counseling, you know, right. how to make great choices and to actually make good choices that are going to affect you in a positive way, not a negative way. And then quite by accident, as those relationship choices began to become clear, it became clear that those relationship choices specifically might be directly related to some of the financial issues that are happening to professional players. Who wants to start a job where you got almost an 80% chance of getting divorced and losing all your money and not having to have a job? I mean, who wants to do that? And that's nobody's plan when they start out a career. But I think it speaks to a larger problem of something that's significant and not being addressed until now. And so I'm really delighted to do that. Part of the tips that I have is I have a list of 10 tips, and I never in the beginnings of this at all thought that I was going to be doing any kind of financial advising. But what we know is how people how people use their money in their life is almost identical to how they use their emotion and their relationships. So it became clear that, well, if we did some relationship counseling, some career counseling for the future, that the financial part of it may also take care of itself, and we could actually increase the percentages. So,
So let me see if I'm following along here. You're saying that people tend to use their emotional, I'm going to call it baggage, just because that's what popped into my head. We may need to talk after the show. I don't know. Just in case. But you're saying that the people tend to use their emotions the same way they do their finances, which am I stating that correctly? Because that actually makes sense to me.
Absolutely.
Okay. So basically, if you're in a mess at home or in your relationships and you're not treating your spouse or your family or your friends decently or well or kindly, you're probably not treating yourself decently or well or kindly, and your money is just another part of who you are, yes?
Absolutely, and that's one
aspect. Okay.
So, a change in one area, and we know this psychologically, that a change in one area of your life can be a global change that affects other areas of your life that aren't mm-hmm. performing to a level that, that you're performing. And I think it's important to note, too, there are many psychologists over time that have formulated an idea about human nature that we actually, instead of having to be built up to reach our fullest potential, that we by nature will automatically want to and seek our fullest potential. But there are impediments within our lives and maybe even a lack of education on how to handle situations in a better way, that those mm-hmm. actually are stumbling blocks for us to reach our potential. And so I kind of work from a wellness model. I think we're all really wonderful and really gifted, each of us individually, regardless of, you know, what our path is in life. And that, you know, when someone walks through my door, they're already a warrior, and they're saying, I have truly taken myself as far as I can. There are some other things I need to know, and these particular things in my life are keeping me from reaching the potential I want. Well, that's where I step in as a humble practitioner and say, mm-hmm. all right, now we have a plan, and then I take the science of what we already know and research it and specifically design a plan individually for each client. And I am, you know, I have my own baggage. I'm a fellow traveler, just like everyone else. So, you know, I really understand, you know, that life is difficult. And oftentimes we get one part of our life or one time in our life figured out and we're good to go, and then life changes and everything changes.
Right.
You have to learn a brand new set of skills.
So. Yeah, well, and particularly these days, and, you know, we're talking about elite athletes, you know, primarily, but and money. But listen, I'm reading about people committing suicide, going into deep depressions because they've lost their money, lost their job. They just don't know where to go. And people, I think, identify themselves so profoundly through that energy called money that oftentimes they just don't seem to know how to cope, which is very scary. It's a very frightening thing that, you know, people can just tie their identity so profoundly to money. And that leads me back to a question that I wanted to ask you. You mentioned personality traits in the very beginning. And you said something about identifying personality traits. Do you find that oftentimes people don't even know what personality traits they possess? They're not really aware of them?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, the funny part of that is if you ask their friends and their family, they see them very clearly.
Right.
So we
or
all
their wife. Yeah, well,
yeah,
yeah.
Or husband, yeah. Let's be fair.
Yeah, exactly.
I have one of those.
Yes, ma'am.
You would have some opinions. But I think there's kind of a beautiful part about our human nature that we have almost a natural blind spot to ourselves, that we experience other people in very real time and we can see them. But when we look at ourselves, especially in relationship, you know, when we're trying to work something out in an intimate relationship, you know, how many of us sit there and go, wow, I said that, but they took it that way and that's not what I meant
right.
at all. We have an idea of how we come across, and we are usually wrong, me included. So,
now, this I do know about myself.
So, you know,
I figured that out a long time ago.
When you were speaking previously about, I don't think people go about, you know, naturally wanting to create negativity or bad relationships in their life. There's just not a lot of education as to how to move in a positive way. And it's the same thing, even specific to mental blocks on the field or performance enhancement in a career, is that, you know, everything needs to be viewed in a clear way, in a very real way. And oftentimes I'll have clients almost sit there with their eyes closed waiting for some horrible news, and they find out some really fantastic things about themselves. And the things that maybe they thought were negative are huge positives, like their drive and their determination, their confidence.
Right.
You know, and confidence is definitely something that is completely counterproductive to negativity. And so confidence is an area you know, that works. And the brain itself is actually has some wiring. It's kind of stacked against you in a way. In fact, I speak about that on the homepage of my webpage, that the brain is actually wired for negativity.
You know, I had read that somewhere. I was reading a book that I picked up called How to Clone the Perfect Blonde. And this, I know.
I love it.
You think, no way. It's actually a book. It's a scientific book. And, you know, I've only gotten about 4 pages into it, and I'm hooked, I have to tell you. But, you know, one of the things they were talking about that I wanted to ask you about is that decision-making, I think, and I'm paraphrasing, I'll have to go back to the book. It's in one of my rooms. I have books in every room of the house. But basically, if I'm paraphrasing this correctly, they're saying that your subconscious is always half a beat, half a second in front of your mouth. So you've already thought it. You've already made the decision before you open your mouth, but you still have time to stop that decision to open your mouth, which
well,
I think is a good thing if you can become aware of that.
Right. Sometimes yes and sometimes no. The brain is a very efficient, the body part, and it really is. It works in very physical ways, and there's some anatomy mm-hmm. to the brain. And I think, and that's actually where I start, are the different parts of the brain, MRI studies. We've actually put athletes in competitive situations and watched how their brains work when they win and how their brains work when they lose. And there's some very interesting research there. But it all begins with the brain. And if you know that it is for a protective mechanism, it is wired negatively. It really mm-hmm. takes away the stigma of, this isn't a personal failing that I have, that I'm negative, or I'm having difficulty thinking in a positive way or improving my performance. It's brain anatomy, and there are negative centers. And the reason the brain is set up that way is for survival. You know, you can't be having
right.
a good time and, you know, be, you know, struck down by a predator. It's the brain has to have the ability to switch into survival mode automatically, and so it's a wonderful preservation. But that mechanism can get in the way. But what we can learn over time is positivity. And I mean, that sounds kind of like a light and fluffy term, but it really isn't. It's scientifically quantifiable, and so is happiness. And excuse me. So learning tools in those areas of positivity, positive self-imagery, confidence building, those specifically affect athletic performance in very positive ways.
Mm.
That we can.
Well, that makes perfect sense. Well, I know one thing you said about confidence, you know, that should be honestly considered a great personality trait. But I think that can be corrupted if you have enough people saying you're not confident, you're arrogant, you're a jerk, you're overbearing. I guess there's a fine line between being confident and being perceived as really kind of a jerk.
Well, I when I'm hearing what you're talking about, I think a lot of people would define that as an ego. And out of complete respect to the environment a professional athlete performs in, ego is a great strength to carry you through peak performance times. And oftentimes it's the only tool that's utilized during performance. And what I've found through my research is if we can actually front load an athlete in his career with the sports psychology for mental skills training and avoiding mental blocks that we know already works, then there are other tools to call on besides ego. And those other tools are, you know, based in confidence and, you know, more of a security of the thought process actually happening within the brain. So oftentimes players can be coached out of them to be in touch with their own emotional decision making.
Mm. Is that a good thing?
I
wouldn't think that would necessarily be a great thing.
From our standpoint, we have research to suggest that emotional integration and reducing negativity and increasing positivity actually works productively for performance on the field. There's kind of the old school, in fact, I've heard a lot of players talk about it, is that, well, you know, your coach comes in, he breaks you down, lets you know you're not all that, and then they rebuild you in a new and better way, hopefully to find your full potential. But you know, psychologically we see that that actually creates negativity and that can create mental blocks. And so, you know, coaches are there and designed to do a specific job, and most all of them do it very, very well. So what a player is able to get from a sports psychologist or a sports psychology counselor is something else. It's almost the secret weapon, and it's basically a one-on-one class on how your brain works, how to make it work positively for
mm-hmm.
you. And what it does is it actually releases the truest gift and the largest potential, which over time creates a wonderful career, less news in the media, negative news in the media, and it even translates
right.
into more income over the time of your career. So it just made sense to me that why don't, well, usually by the time a player is sent to the sports psychologist, something has gone horribly wrong.
and what a shame. I mean,
Absolutely.
It seems like if you could do something to stave off some of this or avoid it entirely, that would be the better investment. So, excuse me, I'm a little bit raspy today. So my next question is this something that's fairly new within sports teams and with athletes? Because it's, now I know this because I knew somebody who was part of the Oakland A's, you know, years ago. And he had to go see the team psychologist, and he was mortified. I mean,
right.
mortified. I mean, they gave him such a hard time. And I guess my question is, when did this kind of turn around? When did team owners and coaches start going to you and saying, you know what, let's kind of help these guys before they get into trouble?
Well, I think it's in the process of turning around. I think there are select few individuals that see the advantage of having a psychology counselor on board. You know, one of my great role models is Dr. Harvey Dorfman, and he's recently passed away, but he was known as Dr. Baseball, and he was wonderful with players during their major league careers and helping them through some difficult times. Harvey's work was wonderful, but I started looking at it in more of a proactive way and maybe uniquely so, and said, well, why don't we take what we know already works? Why don't we begin with athletes when they're 17, 18, 19 years old and begin an educational process that is proactive, not punitive, but actually builds the confidence, builds the amount of emotional tools that this individual can use as they're entering a very volatile environment. You know, it's
right.
a very wonderful environment, but there's also some huge negative things that happen when you become a public figure and when you're having to perform perfectly, you know, in what you consider to be all times. So it can be, there are a lot of negatives to that, and I understand that, and there are ways to prevent that. So I came in and you know, with our work and, you know, friends that we've had over time with professional careers and the questions that have come up, I just kind of scratched my head and said, well, why aren't we starting this in the beginning?
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, when you're working with 17, 18, 19-year-old athletes, a lot of them begin professional careers at that time. The brain is not even fully developed. And
I know.
25.
I know.
So even if you know that as a parent and you're looking at your 17, 18-year-old, you're like, ah, so they can't produce.
Oh, well, remember when we were that age? We just knew Gary. Everything. And our parents were just too stupid to breathe on their own. And that's
true.
When we made them really big.
Your mom's going to be calling in right now.
No. Oh, God, no. She knows. We've had lots of talks, and I've done lots of apologies over time. But
well,
remember when I did this, Mom? I'm really sorry. I know you are.
Yeah, and that's a rite of passage.
It is.
And
it
so
is.
If we know,
but you're
that,
right. At that age, these kids are being coached. They're being groomed. They're being, you know, I live in a college town, and let me tell you, these kids are being scouted at very early ages. It's pretty insane. I mean, you'll see these 15, 16, 17-year-olds are on the front page of the newspaper, their little hometown heroes. And then, you know, you follow them along. There's one in particular, I won't name his name. When he burned out big, and now he's something of a pariah in his own. He didn't really do anything bad. He just didn't make, you know, he didn't live up to all the hype.
Right.
Which I don't know who to blame for that. I find it very upsetting.
Well, and if we look
He's a nice kid. He didn't go out and get, you know, drunk or drugged or, you know, get 14 girls pregnant or wreck cars. I mean, he's a decent, good kid. But because he did not make it, he got thrown off of one team and wound up going to the minors, and it's just like he's no good anymore.
Yeah.
I could smack my local paper. I could. I could smack every one of them.
And that's unfortunate. And it's preventable. It's preventable. So, you know, what happens within a player and what I'm really, I mean, which is really the work I love to do, is the emotional integration. In addition to working on the, you know, the athletic endeavor right then, athletics and the ability to be an athlete is very short-lived. So even working with 17, 18, and 19-year-olds, they're hungry for the information that sports psychology is giving them. They know, you know, they know that their longevity is probably pretty short. But,
right.
You know, a good sports psychology counselor is going to not only look at the career they're in right now, but what are the other potentials that you have, and what are you also going to want to develop over time that's going to help support you over the long haul? What kind of career do you see?
Mm-hmm.
I was working with a wonderful softball pitcher, and a lot of times the political environment beyond the field can really have a negative effect on players, especially when they're teens and, you know, in their early 20s. And we started talking about career aspirations. Well, what else would you add? And I think that's been a really interesting question. What else would you add to your life? And so then we began to do some career counseling. And, you know, then a decision was made, you know, to start looking at other colleges for different reasons. So I got to tell you, it's a really exciting thing to work with a young player that has a huge gift and watch them be able to step effortlessly into their gift without negativity. But then beyond that, say, okay, well, how are we going to plan for the next 20 years, and to see the excitement, and that excitement that they can have a long-term career that they're in control of, it really actually feeds into what's going on with them right now. So players are hungry for the information, and there just hasn't been a good vehicle you know, for it before now. I don't think as psychologists and counselors that we've done a really great job of distilling the information down. And I just, you know, I think that's where I step in. We've got, what, 60 years of psychological science and research, 30 years specifically of sports psychology. When sports psychology actually started, it was called experimental psychology, if you can believe it.
Oh, wow. Now, hang on a second. Isn't all psychology experimental?
Well,
or am I just missing the
No,
boat?
You know what? That is a really great point, and I think you illustrate something that we in our profession have not done a good job of really talking about. I am actually a trained researcher and scientist. If I actually whipped out some of the formulas that we actually use in statistics to you know, make discoveries and create some new science. A lot of people don't think that. I think they have this idea that they're in trouble, they have to be broken, they're dragging their miserable carcass into my office, and it's like going to the principal's office. So I think that's a common thought, and it's not based in what we know scientifically and what we know in our discipline, and I just don't think we've done a great job of talking about that and really realizing that for especially people with a gift or highly people that are really seeking high levels, that there is a whole psychology behind that, and we have the tools to help you do that. And that if you don't access those tools, then others who are at a competitive advantage.
Right.
So we're
and again,
kind of like
the
secret
sense.
Weapon. Yeah, we're kind of like the secret weapon.
Well, I don't know that you're going to be secret that much longer. I don't. If you're doing this kind of work with people, and it sounds to me like it's easily translatable from you know, athletes to entrepreneurs and everything in between. I mean, it sounds like some pretty sound psychology. One of the things that I know I wanted to talk with you about, the Lundblad 10 system, and I cracked up when I read this, and I probably shouldn't tell you that, but I totally cracked up. One of the things that you say is never, ever, ever hire friends, family, or former coaches, you know, to manage your finances or manage everything else. I love that. I mean, it's so difficult to work with family and friends in any, doesn't matter what business you're in.
And, you know, so many people who are new to money or new to managing their money know that. I think something else that's really important in the 10 tips that I provided there, which tend to be financial, but they're also relationship,
mm-hmm.
is really unethical people know that athletes and others who have come into money are uneducated, and they actually seek them out for investment. And I don't think that's something that athletes or celebrities or realize. The other wonderful thing about athletes, and I think there's many stories even recently of great athletes who have turned careers around, they're some of the most generous, loving people as far as
mm-hmm.
donating their time and their resources to helping others in need.
Right.
And so, you know, helping an athlete really come into their gift, really offer some stability in their lives, not only helps them, but then they have the ability to really affect positive change in many other people's lives, in younger athletes coming up or in other specific causes. I've worked with wonderfully great people with organizations over time, and, I mean, it's amazing how simple these tips are, but they're just kind of like, ah, you know, that makes sense.
Right. Well, I know that one of the things that I wanted to ask you about, too, and it's in keeping with everything that we're talking about right now, is, and I'm going back to behavior and I'm going back to personality traits, how do you figure out what is negative and how do you reverse what's negative? I mean, is it best to seek out a psychologist? Is it best to sit down in a well-lit room and shine a light bulb in your own eyes? How do you do this? I mean, how do you get to the truth of it? You put on a fedora, smoke a cigar, and say, okay, you tell me the truth now. I mean, how do you get to the truth?
You know, that's a really great question. And it's one...
You can tell I watch old movies, right?
Oh, yeah, I love the visual. You paint a visual picture that's very well.
Okay.
You know, when someone, as I said, when someone walks in my office, you know, they're already not on their A game, and it's unfortunate.
Mm.
It's unfortunate that they don't, you know, that we've not done a good job of saying, you're a warrior, you're a totally capable person, we're going to teach you some additional skills so you can take yourself farther. And you're coming in with a sense of power. And, you know, maybe I'm unique in that regard, but that's kind of how I look at the power differential. I am
mm-hmm.
truly, truly a humble practitioner. When a client sits down in front of me, they don't know and I don't know how the story is going to unfold. But what I do know is it's going to be a very important story. They themselves are going to discover what's actually tripping them up. They know
mm-hmm.
what they want to improve on, and they know where they want to get. And so that's the process that we uncover. We're both there for them. And then I take their individual, you know, challenges and desires, and then I go back to the research, and then I bring forward the treatment modalities that address those individually. And I have
mm-hmm.
to tell you, I am sitting where I do. I have a very unique viewpoint of human nature, and people show themselves in a way that's very transparent. And that's a very trusted place that I sit. But what I see is with every individual that I work with is strength and beauty, and it is like this beautiful movie that will unfold with a happy ending, and I know that, but it
mm-hmm.
will unfold in ways that will develop from the individual. And we'll both sit there and look back when it's over and go, holy cow, that was amazing.
So it's a journey of discovery.
And it's a positive journey of discovery.
Right.
You know, I think it's important, too, that individuals who are seeking, counseling of any type feel confident and actually interview your practitioners. I would rather have a consultation, and I think consultations should be, free up front.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you should really, really strive to have a good working relationship and be empowered to make that decision. It's important for me to have a good working relationship with you, and I want to make sure that I'm going to, provide the best service. And, there's not always a good chemistry between individuals.
Right,
So be empowered to make those choices, and I think a lot of people don't. They're going through a difficult time, and, and like I said, they're not on their A game. So I think it's important to make a good choice about a practitioner.
I agree. I mean, and that's something that certainly translates into other industries as well. You know, as a virtual assistant, I constantly see people saying, I just need clients. How do I get clients? How do I find clients? How do I keep clients? Well, and my attitude is just like you. If you find somebody that, that you're talking with them and you can tell they're not a good fit, for me, my spidey sense goes off. It does. I know we're not going to be a good fit for whatever reasons, and I am happy to refer you to somebody else or several somebodies, but I never take a client that I'm not convinced that I can't do a slap-up job for.
Right.
It doesn't work. I think it doesn't work in all walks of life. You just shouldn't do it. So if what I'm hearing from you is basically that these people come to you, and it is a shame that they're not on their A game, and they come out of it after this discovery, this voyage of discovery, and this very intensive work with you, they come out of it feeling, number one, better about themselves, but more importantly, recognizing who they are. Is that what I'm understanding?
Absolutely.
And what their strengths are, and maybe what their weaknesses are. And sometimes weaknesses just need to be left alone, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely.
But, does everything need to be fixed? I don't think so.
Well, things...
Or do you choose your battles?
Right. Well, the negatives fix themselves when you incorporate the positives.
I'm pretty efficient. Okay, that's where I was going.
Yeah.
Why you're the doctor and I'm not, because I could not articulate that.
Well, I'm definitely a master's level therapist, and I have worked on that for a very long time. And I think by nature each individual steps into their weaknesses and not their gifts. So I'm pretty efficient. I like to keep things pretty simple and understandable. I require it that way myself. And I just thought it was more efficient and made more sense to work on the positives and then to see what's left. And I have yet to see a pile of negatives that has not completely reversed itself. And I've yet to see a pile of negatives left once we've worked on the positive things. A lot of what I teach is, brain anatomy. Even on my homepage, I talk about the amygdala and how it has two hemispheres. And the negative, the one hemisphere that has to do with negative emotion actually develops sooner as we're growing up than the positive. So we kind of automatically come up with a negative sense of self, and then the positive is supposed to be brought in by our parents who have more developed brains and can implant ideas about who we are and positivity. Well, for most of us, we don't get that. So really, the only other option you have to be trained in that, and it is very changeable. It's a very easy process. It is correctable. But really, the only other environment you're going to have that retraining is with a sports psychologist or a sports psychology counselor. Counselors in general, but for my specialty in that.
Right.
And
So what are some of the steps? Just kind of walk me through. If somebody decides, as you said earlier, not that I'm broken, there's nothing really terribly wrong with me, I just am stuck. I need to get to a different level. For some reason, I've hit this barrier, and that barrier is taller than I am. I need some assistance. So what is a process if somebody calls you and says, okay, I'm at the wall. There's no door. I can't go over it. Don't have a shovel. Can't dig under it. Now what do I do?
That
run my car through it. What do I do?
Yeah, no. Although that's been an option sometimes for some folks, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Because there's just so much information,
is.
And truly caring practitioners who love to do what they do. I do provide full service counseling services, and for a lot of individuals, there can be some pretty significant traumas that have happened over time,
mm-hmm.
and those require a different protocol, a length of time. But let's say that typically I have an athlete, male or female, that calls in and says they're having some performance issues on the field and they want to improve it. What I do is I kind of have the idea at that point, brief is better, and athletes specifically are designed and maybe even neurologically pre-programmed to take information and utilize it immediately. And then they test for themselves where it works. So it makes sense to me to do the Lumblade 10 system is a 10-week program where we do some scientific psychological assessment right off the bat. And then we do, research-based analysis of that and what it means. And even that process in the beginning is not something that can be done through a self-help test. You understand what I'm alluding to there, is that the information is scientific in nature and it needs to be analyzed by somebody trained. And then oftentimes what happens is I think the natural thing is people go, I'm quick to make decisions. Why is that a bad thing? Because most people are like, okay, so that's what's wrong with me. Well, actually, that could be a really great thing to learn about yourself, but it also needs to be steered through the research to illustrate where that's positive, how that's positive, and then individually how you're going to implement that in your life and what issue are you going to deal with. So it's kind of like a 10-week course. We do psychological assessment. We'll work and possibly fix one issue, and then we're done. And that one issue being fixed will have a global effect on other issues. And then...
That makes perfect sense to me. It really does.
Yeah.
It's kind of like if you have a backache and all of a sudden you went to a chiropractor and your back no longer hurts, everything around you is much better.
Right.
And I know that's an odd analogy, but if you fixed your back, you fixed your posture, you fixed your health, everything else just kind of falls into place, it seems.
Right. Well, the probably the clinical explanation of that is there's been some change in cognition. And cognition is how we learn to think about things, how we've made sense of things, or haven't made sense of it, but it makes sense to us and it works poorly.
Right.
So there's an understanding of how we think, how we can individually think to improve what we're trying to improve. So that one change in cognition on that one issue, it's kind of like you learn the flow chart of how to change your thinking on one issue, and then automatically, because the brain is so efficient and it does try to shortcut things, that it will automatically apply that to other areas of your life that you're having trouble with. So it's a beautiful thing. It's a positive spiral. And, people understand negative spirals and that happens, but I don't think they understand that positive spirals happen just as well. You can work on one issue and then it just positively spirals and cascades into other areas of life.
Right.
So the news is great.
It sounds like it is. And again, this can be, it doesn't have to just be athletes. It can be anybody. Now, let me ask you this, though. I know you're in California. In fact, I have to share this with our audience. When you were described to me, you were described as this tall, stunning creature who speaks truck driver.
Trucker.
And I just went, oh, my God, I must meet her.
Well, you haven't
it
had
was the funniest
sweet
thing.
Butt yet. So
and it was if this tale was recounted to me in the driest of English accents, it was precious, I tell you. It really was. It was one of those moments that will stick in my head for a long, long time. But one thing I wanted to ask you is I know that you're located in Hollywood, you're in California.
Yeah,
athletes of course are all over the world. How do you treat athletes who are in another part of the country?
Well, that's probably been the biggest question I get when they come in the front door. And that is the absolutely beautiful thing about the information age now. You know, all of our business can be done, you know, virtually. And, you know, the beautiful thing is people already have created relationships online through Skype and, you know, through other.
Right.
It's a very easy process through that. And I am an educator. A teacher is truly, you know, how I look at it. And, you know, that's online is a very efficient way to get information. And also maybe even, you know, be in crisis at that moment. It's a very easy way to have access. A lot of my clients, by their very nature, work very hard and are completely mobile. You know, if not nationally, they might be internationally. And so, I mean, that's almost a necessity. So that
right.
easily, you know, taken care of in that regard.
Yeah. Right. Well, another question that I had, too, and this is slightly different, but... Well, let me back up just a bit. Where can people find you on the internet, and do you have a toll-free number or phone number where they can reach you?
Oh, absolutely. Okay, I'm going to have to spell the last name, but my webpage is my name. It's Carla Lundblade, LUNDBLADE.com. And all of my contact information is there. You can get my phone number there and or you know, just write me online, and I'll be happy to get in touch with you and answer any questions you have. Don't be daunted. I do speak trucker, but I do speak scientist too, and sometimes that can be a bit alarming and shocking and cause emotional whiplash. But I've put some scientific information there, and I've tried to do it in a very simplistic form. But the reason I've done that is because you know, I tend to be more scientific in nature, and not so touchy-feely. I mean, that part definitely comes in. But it's brain anatomy, and it's what we understand about performance. And so that information is there. You'll see some of the events I've been involved in and, you know, and get a bio about me. And hopefully that'll answer some beginning questions.
Right. And if anybody wants to know what we've been talking about here, the negativity and the brain facts, there is a brain facts page there.
Absolutely, on the home page. You know, again, keeping it simple, which is kind of like kind of my mantra, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I do, who I help, and maybe some things you don't know about the brain is all on the home page. And then I have specifically done, you know, for those who want to dig deeper, I've written two articles that are on my page specifically about sports psychology and professional careers, and you know, talked about some of the issues within a current career, and then talked about a couple of wonderful, brave, honest athletes who are coming forward and, you know, discussing publicly seeking psychological services for their betterment, and that they are very excited about doing that. So I have two articles there. So a lot of information. I think, you know, information
is,
forearmed is forewarned.
That's right. Carla, I wanted to go back just a little bit because I had a question, too, about high school athletes and younger athletes. One of my big concerns has always been that so many of these kids are rushed through school. They're not really educated. And I've seen this, so it's not kind of a sweeping generalization. But it seems to me that they're not armed with, number one, even a rudimentary education, and number two, much in the way of common sense. Am I just dead wrong on this?
Well, I think that's an observation for a lot of folks. And,
yeah, it's a shame, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think the key word that you use there is education. The great thing about education is it improves our common sense.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever education we seek out, not necessarily scholastic education, but you know, career education or relationship education, whatever education we seek out and acquire, that will improve our ability to make common sense decisions. Mm-hmm. And I think even that basic piece is kind of missing, that so much of what we can learn to be more successful people is merely education. And the beautiful
right.
thing about our own brains, our own minds, and our own goals and desires is we have complete control over that, and we more importantly have complete control over our learning. So everybody's hungry for information. Not everybody has access to it. And so that's where I've stepped in and said, well, I might have some additional information to help learn and positively plan for the future. And career counseling is part of that. And it almost
right.
always comes up as a question, what am I going to do long term? And when I'm working
yeah.
with athletes from 14 on, I think I was surprised that they were going to be as hungry for the information. Nobody's career counseling with kids. Well, almost nobody.
Really?
And they
and
are very excited to do that at that age.
Right.
And I think, I have a 21-year-old now who was a teenager, and, he never listened to his mother. Kids don't listen to their parents. That's just part
nope.
of it. That's one of the other things I talk about with parents and coaching. And that's just part of it. But I think I thought, well, I don't know how much teenagers are actually going to take in this information. I was so shocked. And they don't have a lot of that baggage, as you talked about.
Right,
because
they're very young.
Stored, right, and so they implement it immediately and are very excited to do that. So
I cannot even tell you how happy I am to hear that. That is really, for me, that is some exciting news, because I see these kids just get thrust into these great careers, and then they get hurt or they do something really stupid and it's just over, and you think, oh my, what happened? And it's very sad for these kids, and I hate to see it, but if they've got somebody like you who can kind of guide them with career counseling and teaching them how to connect mental performance with improved athletic performance and just basically take care of themselves, I think that's marvelous.
Yeah, I think on the front end of a career, it's a pretty good investment in a career
yeah.
individual. One of the most wonderful former pro players I know said to me just yesterday, we were on the phone, and he said to me, not a client, I don't talk about clients, just to be clear.
No, I figured.
He goes, despite any number of successes or amount of money that's earned or lost over time, he said, Carla, he said, we all bleed red.
Mm-hmm.
And we do. And so if there's some way that I can step in at the front end and help somebody empower themselves and step into their own gift and take charge of this
yeah.
hugely out of control, what appears to be success, there's a lot of negatives, but if I can step in on the front end and help that really is my life's work and what I really enjoy doing.
Well, and you just led me into another question. I know that some of these people, all of a sudden, they're very high, visible, very highly visible celebrities. I mean, here in Louisiana, we've got Drew Brees, who is, he's a tremendous celebrity. He's also a very good guy. He really is. Do these people come to you with saying, look, I have been thrust into the limelight. I love it. I've loved it, but oh my gosh, it's stressful, Can you help people with that?
Well, that is what we end up working on. And, I'd like to say, and this kind of speaks to the blind spot that we all have ourselves, I think we go in thinking, okay, well, I have just this one issue, and it's an issue that you can't have any negative judgment about. It,
mm-hmm.
it has nothing to do with me as a person. It's performance on the field or something, Well, I know that that's going to be the presenting issue, but I know that that's merely a symptom. So I know when somebody walks in and they're saying, I'm having this particular issue with this particular thing, that there's larger things behind it and that are driving that particular thing. For example, a mental block. There are larger cognitive issues about making sense and tying emotion into things that have happened in the past that will cause a mental block to manifest itself. But
mm-hmm.
an athlete will come in and say, hey, I have this mental block. And this is what's going on for me. And I don't know if, when a client walks in the door, if they're aware that it's a larger issue with different parts of the brain functioning together. and but I do. And so I know whatever we present with, you know, in the beginning, that it will go deeper. What I also know is we will find it. That we will find it quickly, and we will find what exactly the cause of the symptom is, and then begin working on it.
Mm-hmm. Now, Carla, do you find that athletes come to you, and at some level, they're really terrified of success?
Well, I guess my question would be, who isn't?
Good. Yeah, that makes perfect sense too.
Yeah, you know.
So, how do you work through that? I mean, I think we all, at some level, reach a point where we go, "Well, you know, I'm done as good as I ever thought I was going to do. I'm good." Nobody, I don't think anybody really wants to get there, but we all do. Now, whether we overcome it is something else entirely different. But I do see people all the time, and I'm guilty of it as well. You know, I'll just get so far and then go, "I'm done. What the heck is that all about?" I need to know. I really do.
Well, see, there's your question. You have made a thought that has made sense to you over time. I'm done. And then your next question to yourself, I mean, without even me stepping in, to yourself is, what's that all about? And
yeah,
the interesting thing
because
is, in that
didn't
moment,
feel right.
You don't know. Yeah, it doesn't feel right,
mm-hmm.
but you also don't know. And that's the beginning step. What I can tell you is that you do know, and that we will find it, and it will be uniquely your answer. And when you
mm-hmm.
know what the cause is, you will also know your best solution to get there. And I am the practitioner that helps in that journey. You're driving the bus.
Right.
I have the atlas, and I'm asking you, where do you want to go, Denise?
I don't want to be stopped.
Right, no. And there's no speed
wow.
limit. You can go as
exactly.
fast as you want.
Exactly. Because I do see it. I see it in all walks of life. I see it in myself. I see it in family. And yet we'll just get to the end of the day and say, well, you know, I could have done just a little bit more today. I could have been 1% better than I was yesterday. Yeah, I'll do it tomorrow. You know, procrastinators unite tomorrow, you know, that type of thing. It's not a good idea, but I think we all do it. So
I think,
are you able to help people get past that?
Well, yeah, and really decide for themselves what is a balance. Life. I think a lot of people balance may not be initial focus, but I mean there are definitely times in your life to drive yourself hard, and then there are mm-hmm. other times in your life to sit back, reflect, offer some emotional reflection as to the direction that you're headed, and sometimes maybe you have to adjust it and change it. So there are times to drive hard, but there if someone too is not taking time to sit back and reevaluate, then you can go in a very fast pace in a direction that in the end you look back and go, that really wasn't where I was headed.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the emotional integration that I was talking about, is really bringing your emotion into, you know, what most of us make is analytical decisions. And
right.
that only makes a better decision for you over time.
Well, it is difficult. You know, for a lot of people who are driven, who are A-type personalities, or, you know, like me, I'm an unrepentant workaholic. I admit it. I don't even try to pretend that I'm not. Is my life balanced? No, ma'am. And I'm starting to... You know, there comes a point where you can't work until 3:30 in the morning every day. It's not right.
Well,
balance
is individual. You know,
right.
your definition of balance in your life, you know, so much of who you are is dictated by your beautiful brain and the chemistry of your brain, and then the cognitions that you've, developed over time, and memories, and the memories that you've tied with emotion. There are different parts of the brain that store that. And there's some areas of the brain that kind of semi-automatically, like you know, like if you respond in a fight and then you're like, ooh, I shouldn't have said that. It's kind
mm-hmm.
of like a semi-conscious or semi-automatic firing, because there was a whole thought process behind it, but you weren't completely aware of it when it happened. So
no.
Those are the kinds of things that you know, this process sheds light on. It's that you're able to see exactly how your brain works, the beauty of your brain, and also balance. What is balance
mm-hmm.
for you? Because odds are, you know, with your family and your life, you know, genetically they're going to be similar to you if there are genetic relations. And, you know, you're going to have some genetic components. You're going to have some environmental components. You're going to have private things that which are usually, unfortunately, traumas. People keep traumas mm-hmm. very private. And you'll right. see the effects of those act out in their life, but nobody will understand, you know, why that person is acting out in that way. They themselves will know, but they've never discussed it, you know, or very seldom have discussed it. So we get to all of that, and it's a freedom process. It's not a punitive process. So your balance mm-hmm. for you is not going to be the balance for anybody else, you know, mm-hmm. and it's really mm-hmm. finding that, and you will know when you hit that balance point.
Well, I haven't gotten there yet. This I know. But I will. I know this about myself because I have that white light on my desk. And at 3:30 in the morning when I'm telling myself, you must sleep now, my little other side is going, five more minutes. It's like living with a kid in my own body. It's really, it's quite annoying. But I figure I'll get there at some point. Well, listen, Carla, tell people where they can find you on the web, where elite athletes can find you to work with you, where people like me can find you to work with you. Where do they find you?
Well, my web address is pretty simple. It is my name. It's CarlaLundblad.com. And then all the other vehicles to get in touch with me are there. My address in Beverly Hills, my phone number. And however, in the information age, usually I get an email. That's how we begin mm-hmm. the process of...
Exactly. Yeah. Same thing here. Listen, thank you so much for being here today. I really enjoyed this. And I'm going to grab my, you know, How to Clone a Blonde and find out what it was. How to Clone a Better Blonde book.
And let me know when the
go to that question that I highlighted. I'm asking Carla about this, and then I forgot to bring the book in here. But anyway, it was pretty fascinating. I thought, I bet she knows the answer.
I know where to look. Where to continue the journey. And thank you, Denise, so much for having me. It's a delight to be here with you, and I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
It's been a lot of fun, and I'd love to get you back again one day soon.
Thank you. I'd love to come back.
Oh, good. Well, listen, thank you, everybody, for being here with us, and the show will be available for download in about an hour. And this is Denise Griffiths and Carla Lundblad wishing you a wonderful weekend, and I will see you next week. Thank you, Carla.
Bye.